The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, Sharks fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. Happy New Year to you all. I hope the statute of limitations on saying Happy New Year has not run out, but hopefully your 2026 is going well. There has been no shortage of great hockey lately. The Sharks have started the second half of the season with a bang. The World Juniors provided some great action as always, and congratulations to Team Sweden for taking the gold medal. In particular, Sharks prospect Leo Selin Valenius and Victor Ekelund, the brother of our own William Ekelund, otherwise known as Ekki. Not to mention, we have the Olympics to look forward to next month. So, hockey, great. But often all but overlooked at this time of year is the U18 Women's World Championships, featuring the young women who are truly the future of the sport at the highest level. And this year, the tournament's being held January 10th to 18th, in Sydney and on Member 2 First Nation in Cape Breton. So for those of you who may not be familiar geographically, Cape Breton Island is at the eastern end of Nova Scotia, the Canadian province of Nova Scotia. Not only is this a really beautiful part of the world, I know I'm biased because I grew up in Nova Scotia, but Cape Breton has actually become an important example of how to make space and therefore create room for growth for women's and girls' hockey. Now, this is in no small part due to the hard work of people like Christina Lamy. Christina, I met her a few years ago. She is a powerhouse. She is the president and founder of the Cape Breton Blizzard Female Hockey Association. She spearheaded efforts in the region to create fair ice access to girls' hockey teams, something that hockey associations all over the globe will no doubt be looking to replicate. It is really unique and incredible. To help us get ready for the U18s and also to fill us in on the state of girls and women's hockey, here is my conversation with Christina Lamy.
So, Christina, I want to start by saying that the fact that Cape Breton is hosting this tournament is a pretty big deal, and it's the result of a lot of people's efforts, not just yours, but really a large effort on your part to create equitable ice time for girls and women's hockey in Cape Breton. So I kind of want to backtrack and just start at the beginning. How is this even possible? What's going on in Cape Breton?
I would say we've had I would think of it in terms of like a bit of an experiment. I arrived back home to live on the island that I grew up on. But previous to that, I had been living in Toronto, where I played women's hockey with the OWAJ system there and the big women's leagues in Toronto. I went back to Halifax and I joined the women's league there. It was nowhere near what was in Ontario. So I joined the board and we made a lot of changes there. Something very important happened there in Halifax, actually. We fought and won for a fair ice access policy at the city of Halifax. Mm. And the difference between before that policy and after that policy is insane. The women's league grew from 7 or 8 teams, one of which would fold every year, to over 40 today. Mm. And two large girls hockey associations were formed after that policy was in place because they could now access the amount of ice they needed for what they were doing. So as they grew, the city built more arenas. Go figure. Yeah. You know, it actually adapted to that growth because they had a policy that they had to be equitable in their distribution of facilities. So then I came back to the island in which I grew up, which is here on Cape Breton. Now, if you know much about Cape Breton Island, it is absolutely a stunningly beautiful place, but very economically depressed. Mm-hmm. The income level here, very low. Kind of not the kind of place you would think you could build a significant new hockey initiative. Right. But when I arrived here, I found that almost nothing had changed from when I was a young girl and was kicked out of hockey when I was in Pee-wee or something and said, "No, there's no place for a girl in our Pee-wee division." So I went back to the very same rink that I grew up in and was kicked out of. And my daughter was about to join hockey. I didn't like what I saw. So myself and a bunch of other like-minded people, one of whom wrote me a note yesterday, actually, because of opening the new arena and was, kind of one of the OGs, right? We started a girls, essentially a house league for, 10-year-olds. You know, we didn't start at the elite level here or anything. We started with, hey, every beginner 10, 9, 10-year-old who wants to join, let's go. And that's where we started. We started with like three teams like that. So there were already a couple of girls teams. There was three girls teams when I arrived here, 18 AAA, 15 AA, and 18 A. So essentially the oldest teenagers, that's all. And of course, there was lots of kids that would be excluded for them because if you didn't make that team, where were you playing?
And were these girls who had also they just come up playing in
Boys
boys minor
hockey.
hockey and then
Yeah. So they were
branched
the
off?
ones who survived that gauntlet.
Literally,
Yes,
literally.
literally. And then there was a and it landed in one of the coveted few spots there were on a girls' team as a teenager. So I could fill in a lot of details in between, but fast forward to today, about 6, 7 years later, and we have a 30-team girls' hockey association with over close to 450 players, oh, 550 when you've got the coaches and everything, like the whole association's quite big. And at one point along the way, we decided we really needed to take the fight public about ice time, how we were being discriminated against for ice time as we were growing because there was no policy here. And we decided to bring attention to ourselves by running for Kraft Hockey Bill. It was totally done as a campaign to draw attention to ourselves for the local politicians, ultimately. Well, it went way beyond that. That storyline ran all across the country. Our organization won Kraft Hockey Bill in order to get $250,000 towards. Well, it was weird because we ran Kraft Hockey Bill not as an arena that needed repair. We didn't even have an arena. We had no arena. We ran Kraft Hockey Bill for an arena repair money that for an arena that didn't exist, really. So, but there was a mothballed arena in the area at the university that had run its life cycle. The Zamboni was stripped for parts in the back room. It was done. So we won that contest, but that was, $250,000 doesn't go far in the construction of an arena. But immediately after winning it, we did succeed in doing what we had intended, which was grab the attention of governments, and the money flowed. And today we are playing hockey in essentially a new $40 million facility. And we're the home, that's our home ice arena.
So this is a hub for girls and women's hockey. I mean, does this exist anywhere else?
I don't believe there's anything like it in the world, actually. It's the main tenant of this arena is a girls' hockey association. The other tenant of it is a women's hockey association. And there's some sledge hockey that is added as well. So it's as far as I'm aware, I don't know of another arena that is purposely dedicated as a home ice arena for girls' associations. And that's Yeah, so as far as I know, I haven't seen anything else quite like it.
Does this tournament now coming to Cape Breton feel like there's some full circle moment? I know you had Diana Fox Carney at the Kehoe Arena and to hang out with the players and drop the puck. Did she scrimmage? Did she
Yes,
play?
we were playing. We tried to talk her into doing full gear, full scrimmage, but she was just like, "No, let's take it easy and we'll just play, you know." Who's Yeah, no, she scrimmaged hard. She poke checked every player on the ice.
I love
Major
it.
defensive plays were happening. She's a good player.
I love that. So, but I mean, this has to, for you, I mean, obviously, there's still hills left to climb, but this has to feel like, wow, we really did something here.
I like to think of it in terms of like more of if I can do this, you can. If me just with the determination that we should have this here. Can do this in a rather economically depressed area that didn't have a lot of resources at its fingertips. We're not a major media market. Just we're on the periphery of things. if every place on the periphery of things did what we did, this can be done. I don't think we are anything special, or any circumstances that we had happen were beyond somebody else to achieve. So I think one of the big things, and I hear this a lot, is that folks in Moncton were calling the other day about, we want a girls hockey arena. So right. I'm hearing this across the country now, that we want an arena for our program. These programs are big. These are 500 player programs. They should absolutely have their own home ice arena, smaller than minor hockey associations already do. So I tend to think of it more in terms of, like, if you can do this here, you can do it anywhere. Right. So I like to think of best practices, right? And it's like, what did we do here, and how can that be replicated across the country? So that's where I'm hoping, you know, organizations like Hockey Canada can lead in those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And that's the goal ultimately.
For, you know, this is a Sharks audience as well. So, you know, the U.S. Girls hockey is really growing here in California, which is amazing to see.
Yes.
But can you just, for context, so people understand what you were witnessing when you first got back to Cape Breton in terms of ice time? I mean, it was basically like kind of the leftovers, right? Like,
oh, absolutely.
All the boys' teams had these sort of grandfathered in rights to ice time, and then the girls' teams would be like whenever they could slot in.
Yes, that's exactly that is the norm in most places in the country.
Right.
Obviously, the city of Halifax changed that, and look what happened. To me, girls hockey is one of those sports that if you create the space for it, it will fill it. Mm-hmm. So it's I tend to look at how these structures are, and I don't know a huge amount about the US structure. I'm extremely familiar with the Canadian structures, but that's exactly it. There's this old system. I won't call it old. I'll say it's actually this robust, powerful system of minor hockey that mm-hmm. exists across the country. And I'm a huge fan of it. Fundamentally, talk about building something really strong. Every single little town in Canada has a minor hockey association. And if you live in that little town, you play for that minor hockey association, and you can build a rink and take it to the bank that minor hockey association will exist there, because it has a geographic monopoly on the players. So if you live in any town, Canada, you play for any town minor hockey. So that's one of those systemic things that really girls hockey struggles with, because they don't exist in that system anywhere. If a forming a girls hockey team, it's only essentially the will of the people to do it. There's no geographical monopoly. They have no ice contracts. Often they're starting to gain them, but it's like one ice time after another here, there, everywhere. It's like picking things out of the air. Right. Mm-hmm. So that creates chaos. And I would say unreliability has been one of the big Achilles heels of girls hockey. It's like, will I have a team next year? Should I join the girls association? What if there's not enough for a team? It's safer to just join the boys minor hockey association, because you can count on it. And I'd like to see a massive systemic change about that. Mm-hmm. I personally feel that in Canada, we are at a place right now where you can designate a girls hockey association everywhere in the country, and that should be the go-to. I think they will all succeed, but a big part of it has to be equitable access to the ice time that's in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
building new rinks. That's what Hockey Canada should fight for, is you fight for building new rinks.
Yeah.
But that's the goal. Let's not kid ourselves that there's some other path here. It has to be, you know, a clear pathway is actually a benefit for girls in hockey.
Well, I love that. I mean, you and I met years ago when I was on tour with Rogers Subtown Hockey. And you know, this, you are already sort of into this, I won't call it a fight, but battle, campaign. And, you know, I am so thrilled that, now you've created this model that people can turn to. I want to talk about the community at large, both, you know, on Cape Breton Island and Sydney, member 2 First Nation. What does it mean for your community there to host this international event?
Oh, it's great. So I tend to think of things in our community. We're very diverse, like a hardworking kind of community. 20% of our players are actually Indigenous. So we operate, for instance, in 4 arenas. Our new arena, an old rundown facility that we only use for practicing because it's not really game ready.
Right.
And the 2 First Nations communities that are around us, right next to us here, we have ice in both of those. If it
Right.
wasn't for the indigenous communities that we live among here, we'd be nowhere. Like
Yeah, yeah.
they were the ones who opened the doors at their arenas. It was not the city-owned arenas or anything like that. Yeah, so Hualalan for that. That was my. They've been great partners on everything and love hockey. Like
Right.
Canada's First Nations people are. Well, they are, kind of invented it, right? They were there. They were
I believe
the
so.
hockey sticks.
Listen,
Yeah,
Windsor,
like
Nova Scotia tries to lay claim, but I believe it was a Mi'kmaq
yes, exactly. There's
invention.
evidence to that. So I think us hosting, or almost a perfect host for an event like this, the games are going to be very well attended. People are excited to see the U18 Women's Worlds. Our players are very excited because they see these players as the future stars of the PWHL. I'm expecting there's going to be some high level of compete from these players at this tournament because now they have something to dream about. These girls will all want to go to the top levels of the game now, which are outstanding. So I feel like in some ways we're witnessing the very beginnings of a realistic dream for girls in hockey. Like they're not just competing for Canada and their country out there, but they're also competing for a career and a future in the sport. Like there's so much more on the line right now for them. So I expect them they're bringing their best.
It's so amazing to behold. For people who may pay a lot of attention to the men's juniors that just happened, of course it's a great tournament. But like, how would you describe the skill level of these U18 athletes, and why is it such an afterthought?
Oh, like what do you mean by an afterthought? The
Well,
girls
the
compete.
U18s, I mean, we watched the whole World Juniors tournament on TV every year. I remember one year, I think they were showing the U18s, they were broadcasting it or streaming it, but it looked like we were watching through like one of those peepholes on a door. Like, they just don't
Someone's
get,
dash cam.
they don't get the same level of media. They don't, and but these are, the best in the world at this age group.
Yes, I think we're starting to see that pivot now as well, right? TSN's here going to be covering this event. So expect broadcast quality games to be covered. Like I was mentioning, these players are in the pipeline for the PWHL, which, as we all know, is just rocking it out there, doing their own thing and killing it, and that is such a big part, I think, of the women's game, and these players and everything. They're the future of it. It's so important that it is shaped in its own image. You know what I mean? That I love that the PWHL isn't the WNHL,
Yes, me too.
right? I think that's the reason for success, actually, hugely. The more autonomy a girls and women's sport organization has, I think the more success it will have. Everything women do is much better when you don't have to ask permission for it. That's my line in life. So just like with us, everything we always push to do was an expectation that we're going to have what we want here, that we don't need to ask for it and beg for it. And I love to see that these young girls are growing up and coming of age at a time where the women's game that they're heading into is shaped by women. Like they're heading into a pro league that is like built for them, as opposed to something that may have been, like this, all that we talked, there's a lot of talk for a long time that the NHL would run a women's league. Remember, that was always like that was the chatter for so long. Super grateful that that's not the way it played out.
Well, I mean, it would have meant waiting for
Ever.
indefinitely, forever. It was just like, not now, not yet, not now. So yeah, I mean, this is
Always like not yet, not now, not now,
not
not now.
yet.
When?
Right. But you gave a really great TEDx talk. And you sort of provided a cautionary tale, and I wonder if this still applies because it was a few years ago. But you talked about the fact that women's hockey in the 1940s was actually really growing and was on the cusp of being a demonstration sport at the Olympics, which, Christina, I had no idea. And then everything kind of fell off. So why is that a cautionary tale? Do we need to be paying attention to that at this point, or have we reached the tipping point?
No, we are nowhere near the tipping point. I can't tell you how much this occupies my thoughts all the time about how vulnerable even my girls' hockey association is. Like the male-dominated system, those systems are built to protect themselves, right? And there is no real system for grassroots girls hockey in the country, which I think is crucial for the future success of the PWHL. The more girls that play, the more success and more, what's the word for it, protection the PWHL has for its future, right? Where I hate to say it, every time a little girl steps on the ice, you're banking the PWHL, right? So if we are not developing a robust, bulletproof system for girls hockey in the country, then we are shortchanging that future in ahead. Like, here's an example, right? So here's my arena, which I'm so super excited about. I have an arena. There's a pressure there, right? I need to fill that thing. Next door, there's a boys hockey association, a minor hockey association. They have an arena. That boys association is guaranteed every single player in its geographical area. There's nothing that rink manager loves more, and nothing they can take to the bank more than that minor hockey association. It's guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed with our girls association. We have to be better than all of the boys' associations all around us in order to succeed. Otherwise, the people won't choose us. If we suck, we're done. They can suck and they're not done, but we do, we're done. And there's a bit of a problem there. There's almost like a system is not robust if it has no room for failure in it. Everything has failure. No progress is linear. It goes up and down and has hiccups along the way. We're experiencing right now a tremendous growth in girls hockey, so it's just trajectorying up, and we think that's success. No, to me, success is when that starts to flatline. How do we ensure that we continue to gain ice contracts, gain infrastructure, all of these things that make it impervious to, these bumps in the road? So I would say right now we are not paying enough attention to this. The grassroots of girls hockey within the Hockey Canada structure fundamentally doesn't even exist. Like, where in the Hockey Canada structure do girls hockey associations have any kind of place? We don't really exist. In fact, there was a minor hockey association who didn't want us to form back when we were forming a few years ago. They had, I believe, taken a, I don't know if they had gotten a lawyer or whatever to want to make an argument about why they shouldn't be able, have to release any players to us. And their argument was that there's no such thing as a girls' hockey association.
Good
I
God.
think they backed off from arguing that only because of optics, not because they were wrong. So there's a major systemic issue here that I really feel Hockey Canada needs to address. And they had a report out recently and didn't touch that. And I'm like thinking that's foundational. We have to get back to the foundations of the system that underpins this. And I'm super aware of it because I run a girls' hockey association, and I know how vulnerable it is to erosion. It's a good word to use. Super vulnerable to erosion. Minor boys' system is impervious to that. So, how can Hockey Canada stand there and say, girls hockey should all be about, oh, as many choices as possible, when the minor boys system that they built is about no choice at all? So, yeah, there's some much deeper discussions about systemic issues there. And if we want to build big, strong girls hockey associations in the country, then you need to make them resilient.
That is such a good point, because of course everything it's so new and hot right now, and there's such explosive growth. But you're right. What happens when that levels off? It's
Yeah.
such good food for thought,
Because
Christina.
when it levels off, just like boys' minor hockey has leveled off, we are not standing on the same type of ground. They're still standing on their geographic monopolies over players, and girls' hockey is standing on nothing.
Wow. Gosh, you are such a powerful voice in this space. For those people who are listening and are inspired by what you and your group have done in Cape Breton, or should I say on Cape Breton?
No, you say in,
in
yeah.
in in on
In an island. What? That's weird. Okay, never
yeah,
mind.
on Cape Breton. What are some of the first steps, and how can they take some of your learnings? And use them to start strengthening girls hockey in their areas.
Okay, this is going to be a super feminist position on this ultimately kind of thing. own your own ice contracts, develop your own teams and systems and leagues. Try not to be too enmeshed in other organizations, because the more places you need to ask permission of, bigger problems you have. Number one thing would be to try to, gain ice contracts, because once you have ice contracts, then you can use that. When you kind of are forming a group of people and then you're looking for ice, that's you're in a weak position there. So I always felt like, the example of Halifax is a great one. There's other places too. Ontario has so many examples of this as well. Ontario is, the absolute leader in this space, of when you form these hockey associations and form an association, that you kind of have your own property, your own space, your own fundraising systems, everything. The less you rely on the existing system and keep shaping your own, the better, because the existing system wasn't built for you and it's not really designed to integrate you either. So it's that was my essentially my go for it. And I think here in Nova Scotia, we've done a pretty good job of that. We have where I'm my area is one of seven girls hockey associations in Nova Scotia. We cover every inch of the province. Technically speaking, no matter where you live in Nova Scotia, you're within the boundary of some girls hockey association. Works really well. We have our own leadership group who makes most of the decisions. And for the most part, like Hockey Nova Scotia pretty much says, you do you, and away we go, And that's been successful. Like, mostly get out of the way. Get out of the way. Give us the space. Let us have the space. I shouldn't, I actually, I hate my phrasing I just did there. Let us have. Take the space and build it. And don't put yourself in a position where you need to ask permission for everything. Your instincts about what the girls want and what the parents of the girls want is right. Like, there's something I did a while ago, because so much data that people use in sports and everything, they ask the existing players what they think of something. And I didn't want to know what the existing players think. I want to know what the people who were not there think, right? And so I polled parents of girls age 6 and 7. And I asked them, would you consider hockey for your daughter? Yes or no. Would you consider hockey for her if it was a girls' hockey association? Yes or no. And the differential was about 35%, meaning that 35% of those parents were not consider hockey unless it was a girls' hockey association. So I don't think that's really been ever measured by people, because that's a key number. How many players are you actually missing out on because you're not offering girls hockey?
Well, you
Lots.
are about as far as you can be from where I am right now in North America. I'm in the Bay Area in California. But I know that these lessons can apply absolutely everywhere. You are so inspiring, Christina. Is there anything more that we should know about the upcoming tournament?
Oh, for the Women's World U18s. Oh, I think just generally, I'm just mostly in awe of how good these players are and how they are so lucky to be at the time that they're in. They're going to have quite an experience in the sport. But they also need to know and understand too the history of the sport and how, like I said, progress isn't linear. There have been some horrifying setbacks to girls and women's hockey over the years. Like you mentioned, that it was supposed to go in the Olympics in 1940, and it didn't actually get there till 1998. Like I mentioned that in the TEDx talk I did about how those women in the 30s, like those women who were playing really good hockey in the 30s, there was big teams and they were filling arenas in the 30s. Their daughters and granddaughters couldn't play the sport. Like, that's crazy. So, and as you see it happening all the time with the erosions of people's rights. It would be really naive to think that women's hockey is just about hockey. It's actually very political. And I hope the young generation come up, educates themselves about that. Just because you think you see your future, there's a lot that's happened in the past. You can learn from that.
Amen. Christina, thank you for your time. I know this is such a busy time for you. I wish I was there to see it in person, but congratulations on all you've managed to achieve there. It's incredible.
Well, thank you, Tara, for having me on to talk about some of these issues, because I think people think everything's great now. No, so much of the underlying systems are in bad, bad shape and need to be, this is the time to fix those things.
Once again, thank you so much to Christina for giving me some of her time, which is in incredibly short supply right now. For anybody interested, please try to take in some of the action. 8 teams from around the world vying for the gold medal at the U18 Women's World Championship runs from January 10th to the 18th. For those of you who are fans of U.S. hockey, there is a young phenomenon named China Taylor. She's a 16-year-old defenseman from Kentucky who's named Sports Illustrated Kids 2025 Sports Kid of the Year, and she truly is the future of the sport. So this is your chance to see her before she ascends to superstardom, I think. Thank you so much for being here. I am so happy to be back with you in 2026. Onwards and upwards we go. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, keep your sticks on the ice and your fins above water.